You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, y'all, it's been a while since we were last on, man. I apologize. But first and foremost, man, Happy New Year to everybody. I know I'm late. I know I'm weeks behind, but Happy New Year. I hope everybody's 2024 is getting off to a great start. I hope everybody had a great New Year celebration, bringing in the new year. And again, I hope everybody is starting off this year on the right foot, man. You know, it's such a blessing to be here in another year. 2023 was a long year. It had its ups, it had its downs, but thank God that we are here in 2024, and I wish nothing but the best for everybody and many blessings in 2024. But hey, look, a lot has happened since we've last been together, man. So much stuff going on in the world of sports. Just it's hard to keep up, man, if you're a sports fan. It's just like one thing after another, multiple things throughout each day, all day, every day, man. But that's why we love sports. That's why we love to talk and to cover everything that's happening in real time and when we can. I have some good stuff to talk about today, man. We had some head coaching changes, man. A lot of things switching around in college and in the NFL. And then we got some great games ahead of us to decide who's going to be going up and facing off in the Super Bowl, man. So excited to discuss that with you guys. First and foremost, man, let's talk about the biggest head coaching change in football, even including, you know, college and NFL. I would say this news that we got a couple weeks ago really broke the internet. And you all know what I'm talking about, man. It's Nick Saban retiring. Nick Saban has officially retired from being the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Man, this news, and before I get into anything else, you know, I remember just driving home from work that day, and I think I was coming up to a light or whatever, and I got the news, the notification that came to my phone, and I was just like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that Saban is actually retired, man. Like, it really, 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 it was a shocker. I mean, I'm not gonna sit up here and say, like, yeah, I mean, he shouldn't have done it. But obviously, we know, you know, the type of work that Nick Saban has put in while being a head coach at Alabama. I mean, even in his coaching tenure, had so much success, impacted so many lives. The GOAT. I mean, there's nothing else to say about that. I mean, there's nothing more that you can say that Nick Saban has had to prove. But, you know, he's currently 72 years old, as we all know. Completed his 17th season as the head coach of Alabama. 201-29 record at Alabama, and as a coach in general, it's 292-71. He's sixth all time in FBS wins, and then 12th in the NCAA college football history, and that's regardless of whatever division he was in. 7 national championships, 6 of those with Alabama. Obviously, we know the first one was with LSU. He led Alabama to 2 undefeated seasons, national championship seasons, one in 2009, which was his first, and one in 2020, which was his last national championship game that he coached in. And he's had 49 players selected in the first round of the NFL draft. He's coached all 4 of Alabama's Heisman Trophy winners. That's Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry, Devontae Smith and Bryce Young. No coach has more number one recruiting classes than Nick Saban. He's had 8. He's a 2-time Paul Bear Bryant Award winner, a 2-time Walter Camp Coach of the Year Award winner, and a 2-time AP Coach of the Year winner. So that's just and that's just a piece of what he's done as a head coach, man, at Alabama, and even in his entire tenure as a coach on the NFL, on the college level. I mean, there's nothing, like I said before, there's nothing else left for Nick Saban to prove. I mean, and this whole idea of Saban retiring because he was running from the NIL is idiotic to me. I've seen, you know, too many people come out here and say that, oh, he was running because he couldn't compete when it came to recruiting and all this. Just that's just stupid. That's for anybody to fix their lips to say something like that is completely dumb. Nick Saban has won at each transition in college football. He's never had the same coaching staff consistently any year. He's constantly having to reload on the offensive and defensive side of the ball for coaches. He's won during COVID. Post-COVID. He's won during COVID. He's competed recruiting during the NIL era. Like he's won in recruiting. He's been one of the best at it. So to say that he's running away from that, I think that's disrespectful to the GOAT. But he did mention, you know, at 72 years of age, having, you know, 14-hour days, that takes a toll on you. I mean, he's at that age, but I mean, he just wants to relax and enjoy life, travel, you know, enjoy his family. And we know his wife, Terry Saban, we know he had a lot to, you know, she had a lot to do with that. She probably told Nick, like, hey, look, there's nothing else left for you to prove, you know, especially the job that he was able to do with this team this past year, a team that a lot of people said was going to have 3 to 4 losses, a team that everybody wrote off after losing a game to Texas at home in week 2. A team that people said was nowhere near ready to compete in the SEC and for a national championship. But what did he do? He led this team to an SEC championship, knocking off Georgia, who y'all said we're going to three-peat. And a college football playoff appearance, regardless of how you feel about it. They were in the playoffs with a chance to go to the national championship. And really, the game against Michigan was the national championship. That Rose Bowl game was insane. And yeah, I know y'all haven't heard from me since that game. But that's not the reason why. Alabama's lost before and I've recorded episodes. So that's not the reason why I have not come on and recorded. But, you know, Michigan was able to knock off Alabama in the Rose Bowl, 27-20 in overtime, which is a great game. Hate the result of the game. Felt like Alabama didn't play their best football, was not there mentally throughout the game. Too many mistakes on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. The snaps from the center were awful, including the last play. So glad that he's gone. Ohio State, good luck with Seth McLaughlin. Yeah, too many blown coverages, and Michigan just wanted it more. I mean, I, you know, again, you can't win them all, but I wish that, you know, they would have been able to send Saban off with the national championship trophy if, you know, that was going to be his last, knowing that this is going to be his last year. I mean, nobody knew, obviously, but him and, you know, maybe his wife, obviously, but I would have wished that he could have gone out a national champion. But again, regardless, there's nothing that he has to prove. The work that he's done, the way that he's impacted not only the lives of these college kids, even grown men in the NFL, and also the community in Tuscaloosa, man. The way he's impacted so many lives, him and Terry Sabin, man, it's just I am grateful that I was able to be a part of witnessing, you know, the greatness of Nick Saban and being on campus at Alabama when, you know, we won two back-to-back national championships my sophomore and my junior year. So such a great time and a great experience, and I'm glad that I was able to experience that. And a lot of people think that, you know, Saban is completely gone from the program, and he's not. He's actually been named the advisor of Alabama football team. So he has a office that's actually in Bryant-Denny that's being built, if not already built. And he's still going to be around to be advising, you know, the team and being a helpful resource is what he said. He still wants to help in any way that he can. The new head coach, the new staff and everything. And let's get into the new head coach, shall we? Kalen DeBoer, former Washington head coach, is now taking the job and taking the reins as the new head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He's coming in with an overall record of 104-12, led Washington to the national championship this year in just his second season as their head coach. He's 2-1 in bowls, 3 NAIA championships, 4 GPAC championships, and 1 Pac-12 championship. So he's won at every level that he's been at. He's done nothing but win, regardless of the, you know, I know we like to get into the the level of competition and everything like that. But, you know, regardless of how you feel about it, he's won at every level. Kalen DeBoer, I think, he's the best fit that I could have imagined for this job. I mean, outside of, you know, Steve Sarkisian, who I thought, you know, if he was available, yeah, but I knew that was a long shot. I didn't think that Sark was leaving Texas at all. Lane Kiffin was another guy that, you know, he obviously has ties with Alabama, being an offensive coordinator there with Saban. He was another guy, but I, again, didn't know if that was a long shot for Kiffin to leave Ole Miss after, you know, what he's been building there. I couldn't have imagined, you know, outside of those two guys, a better fit, you know, for this job that for who was available. I think that Kalen DeBoer has the right energy. He has the right mindset. He's coming in doing all the right things. I think that the fact that he was willing to even take this job when a lot of people were running from it, you know, I don't think it was many people just jumping up, raising their hands, saying that, hey, give me the job. I want the job. I want to come after Nick Saban. It takes a lot of heart, a lot of guts to go and try to step in the place after Nick Saban is gone. I mean, that takes guts. And the fact that he, you know, was one of the first people to stand up and say, look, hey, I want this job. That's the kind of guy that I would want leading, you know, this football team. And I'm glad that we do have Kalen DeBoer. And a lot of people, you know, they're gonna write him off. A lot of people have written him off before he's even had an opportunity. They didn't give him a chance. But in just 2 weeks, he's, you know, met with the football team. Multiple times he's met and talked with the players individually multiple times. He's talked with recruits that were offered at decommitted. You know, he's out on the road currently recruiting. He's put together a great coaching staff, elevated Freddie Roach to the assistant head coach position, which was huge. I just think that he's doing all the right things. And I watched his press conference and the session that he had after the press conference where they were just, you know, he had a little Q&A session. And just listening to the way that he talks and his mindset and, you know, how he is locked in and focused on, you know, really fitting himself into the brand that Alabama has already built, what Nick Saban has already put in place. The standard is still the standard at Alabama. And he knows that. He respects that. And he said that, look, I'm leaning on Nick Saban. I'm asking him a question. Oh, I'm asking him questions every day. I'm asking him to give me one thing that we could get better at every single day. And when you have somebody coming in with that type of mindset, look, there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be just fine. And look, he's already got, you know, Parker Brailsford, one of his guys. He's got some transfers coming in. Again, the center, Parker Brailsford. So we got a new center in Alabama to replace whatever was going on last year. I couldn't wrap my mind around how we couldn't get a snap correctly last year with Seth McLaughlin. But again, Ohio State, good luck with that. But for whatever reason, he couldn't snap the ball correctly. So, but again, he's brought over the center from Washington. Jeremy Bernard transferred over from Washington, a receiver that's going to be great in this offense, who's already had familiarity with Ryan Grubb, the offensive coordinator, who Michael Penix Jr. even came out and said, if you're a receiver, Alabama is the place to be under Ryan Grubb, calling plays, and DeBoer head coaching. So shout out to Michael Penix for that. And he's also got Austin Mack transferring over, quarterback. He's 18 years old, 6'6", 240? 6'6", 240? Yeah, so got three transfers from Washington so far. And then Jabbar Muhammad, his number one cornerback, who's in his senior season right now, is still in play. He's had a visit with Texas. He's had a visit at Alabama. And he has a visit this weekend at Oregon. So, you know, he should be making his decision pretty soon after that Oregon visit. So, you know, he could get him. And then one of the biggest things that DeBoer was able to do is to get Ryan Williams, a five-star wide receiver, to recommit. And he also got four-star edge Noah Carter to commit to Alabama. Now, Ryan Williams was the guy who, you know, Nick Saban recruited heavily. The day that Nick Saban announced that he retired, Ryan Williams decommitted, said that, look, if Saban's gone, I'm gone, which a lot of other, you know, players did, which we get. You want to play, you came to Alabama to play for Saban. Saban's not there. You know, it happens. But I think that was a huge get for DeBoer to be able to convince Ryan Williams to come back. Ryan Williams said, look, you know, Alabama was the only place that allowed me and my siblings to be able to come on the campus. DeBoer talked to Ryan Williams every day, every single day, put in that work to get him to recommit. And I thought that was a great get for DeBoer, especially, you know, Ryan Williams considering other schools. I mean, could have, you know, had a visit set up with Texas and Auburn, canceled both of those visits. So, sorry, Auburn. I know y'all were so convinced that y'all were going to get him to transfer, but oh well. And on top of that, Auburn got upset by Alabama in basketball the other day too, on Wednesday. So, Bam was able to knock off Auburn, who's number 8 in the country. Not anymore right now, obviously after that loss, but yeah, Auburn, just take it 2-0. So, shout out to all my Auburn homeboys. I hope y'all are listening in to this right now. So, but yeah, man. I mean, people look at everybody that transferred out of Alabama and, oh, you guys are just losing everybody. Yeah, okay. 18 of those people were leaving when Saban was still in seat. 10 of those guys. It was like 8 to 10 of those guys after DeBoer got there, and DeBoer didn't even get a chance a lot of those guys didn't even give him a chance. So, I mean, Caleb Downs was probably the biggest one that hurt the most. We know that he transferred to Ohio State and Georgia again. I know that y'all thought that y'all were going to get him when you took T-Rob over from Alabama, and y'all thought y'all were just going to get Caleb Downs. That didn't happen. He ended up choosing Ohio State. So that was the biggest loss. After that, you had Isaiah Bond. Didn't really have a huge year at Alabama at all. I mean, he made the catch in the Iron Bowl on 4th and 31. But after that, I mean, I just felt like the way that Isaiah Bond handled the situation was completely unprofessional. I did not like, it's not the fact that he transferred, it's the way that he transferred. DeBoer reached out to him. He didn't even give him the decency of giving him a call back. He immediately went to Texas. They gave him a Lamborghini and millions of dollars. And yeah, he said, all right, bye, I'm out. I mean, you throwing kids money like that, of course they're going to leave. But I just felt like him not even giving him the decency of a conversation was just, I don't like that at all. And then after that, Amari Nyblack, tight end that left for Texas as well. Not a huge loss. He's replaceable with Caleb Odom coming in. I mean, people look at this and say, oh, everybody's transferring to Alabama. A lot of the people that transferred out of Alabama did not start. They were not starters. They were in line. Some of them were in line to potentially be able to start and compete, but they left. Caden Proctor, one of the other guys that left, he was a starter, but you know, he gave up a lot of sacks last year, so and wasn't blocking a soul in the Rose Bowl at all. So that's not a huge loss. So it's not as worse as what people are trying to make it out to be. The transfer portal is the transfer portal, but to not think that Alabama's loaded at every position across the board is insane. But like I said, I'm not gonna continue to harp on that. Y'all will see when the time comes. You will see. I mean, everybody, it's funny when people think that Bama's downfall is here, but Bama's still going to be competing for national championships, still going to be winning. So I guarantee you, Bama's in good hands. But again, with the guys that they have returning on the defensive side of the ball, with Campbell, Deontay Lawson, Malachi Moore, you know, those guys being leaders on the defensive end, and, you know, Jalen Milroe, Jalen Hale, you got Kendrick Law, Henderson, Ryan Williams, I mean, Jeremy Bernard. We got, there's some pieces there. And let's not forget about Jam Miller and Justice Hayes at running back. I mean, Bama's still loaded, so make no mistake about it. But again, y'all will see. I'm not even going to say anything else. Just wait and see. But let's move on, man. Let's move on and talk about another coach who's moving. And that's Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh is the new Chargers head coach. And this is, you know, coming off of a national championship run where he led Michigan. He spent 8 years in Michigan, 89-25 record. He's three-time Big Ten champion, and he's beat Ohio State three times in a row. And again, like I said, national champion for this year. And he just signed a five-year deal to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. So this is his first time as a head coach in the NFL since 2014 with the 49ers. So it's big. He always wanted to go back to the NFL. I think everybody knew that. It was just about the right time and the right fit. And, you know, the Chargers, you know, they brought him in. I know the Falcons brought him in for a couple of interviews as well, but ultimately it ended up being the Chargers. Now, the Chargers, they finished 5-12 last year. Harbaugh's coming in with, you know, the leaders of this team being Justin Herbert. Obviously, you got Austin Eckler, and then you got Keenan Allen. I mean, he could have some success with this team, you know, over time. So, you know, it's not going to happen, obviously, in the first year, but they currently sit with the number five pick in the NFL draft. So it's going to be interesting to see with, you know, what he's able to do with Justin Herbert. But I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, they have some pieces there. They got some young pieces. Let's see what they do in the draft before, you know, before I make any real judgment about anything. I definitely see who they bring in. And but you get a guy in Harbaugh who's, you know, he's won. I mean, he's been successful as a coach. So I think that the Chargers, with the where they are right now, I mean, they're in a win now mode, obviously. I mean, you can't take any more 5-12 seasons and not, getting to the playoffs and competing for a Super Bowl. So we'll see. But I do think that this is a really good fit for the Chargers, and we'll see how it turns out. Yeah, I mean, that's all I got to say about that. But I think that there's still some investigation going on when it comes to, like, what was going on in Michigan. But I hadn't really seen too much about that. But Jim Harbaugh was like, look, I got to get up out of there. but I'm pretty sure they're going to continue to try to bring up stuff that's going on, from his time at Michigan. So, yeah, again, we'll see. We will see. And moving on, man, let's talk about and then also, let me not forget about Pete Carroll also retiring. That was another news that broke within that, that it was like that 2-day span where it was like Pete Carroll retiring, Nick Saban retiring, then Bill Belichick being let go from the Patriots. They mutually parted ways, whatever you call it, but whatever you want to call it. That was a wild day. But yeah, Pete Carroll's another guy. He's old, he's gotten up there in years. Obviously, he's done a lot, from college to the NFL. So yeah, it's time. I mean, when it's time, it's time. Yeah, I mean, he's had success. I mean, he's won, should have won the Super Bowl. I'm still questioning why they called a a slant play in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, I mean, I think that we're starting to see like that. It's crazy to be, looking at the transition of these coaches who have been doing it for so long, moving on. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry. I had to just make sure I mentioned that because I didn't want to skate over the fact that Pete Carroll was retiring as well. But yeah, let's get back to the Bill Belichick situation. He, again, like I mentioned before, was interviewed by the Falcons a couple times. They brought him in for a second interview, but the Falcons actually decided to hire Raheem Morris. Now, this is huge. This is a great hire for the Falcons. I know a couple of Falcons fans who really wanted Harbaugh, but this is a great hire. This is actually the first full-time black head coach in the Falcons franchise history. So, again, that's big. Always rooting for, the black coaches out there to get head coaching positions. This is a guy who's familiar in Atlanta. He's 17-31 in three seasons as the Buccaneers head coach. So not a successful record as a head coach in the NFL. That was 2009 to 2010. He was the interim head coach of the Falcons in 2020. He did go 4-7 in 11 games, so didn't have a winning record there either. But he did win a Super Bowl with the Rams in 2021 as their defensive coordinator. So you bring in a guy, again, who's familiar with Atlanta, loves Atlanta, again, was the interim coach. He's won a Super Bowl, defensive-minded head coach, which is what you love. Then you know that they're definitely going to prioritize, not just prioritizing defense, but when you have a defensive-minded head coach, that does help because defense wins championships at the end of the day. So I'm pretty sure he'll come in and, he's not going to be that guy that like a Belichick that's going to come in and want to completely take over. I think Morris is going to be more so the guy who's going to be a sponge learning, more about he knows the culture of Atlanta, but it's a new culture now since he was last there. So learning about, this new culture, learning about, how he can, put this team in the best position to win. So, I think that's ultimately why they went with Morris over Belichick, because again, they have a relationship with him before already. And you know, let's be real, Belichick's in his 70s, man. I mean, how much longer is he going to be able to do this? I mean, that's not to take away anything he's done, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Belichick isn't a head coach in 2024. I mean, people are looking for longevity right now. And again, Belichick has won at every aspect. I mean, he doesn't have anything else to prove. I know that he still wants to coach, but there's nothing else left for him to prove. I mean, is he going to completely stop trying to be a head coach? I don't think he's going to give up. I mean, you still got the Commanders and the Seahawks are still teams that have head coaching vacancies. But I do think that, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if neither one of them went with Bill Belichick. I mean, people are looking for people who's going to be there for, you know, the next, who's going to be here for at least the next 10 years or something like that, you know, especially teams that are young and they're trying to, you know, they're really in the rebuild mode, you know? So I don't think Bill Belichick is going to be coaching for 10 more years, you know? So, but again, maybe he ends up coming on staff with, you know, somewhere where he can be, I don't know, involved on the defensive side of the ball, but he's not, wherever he goes, I mean, if he does join, he's not going to have that control like he's used to having. So, yeah, we'll see what happens, but it would not surprise me. Again, it would not surprise me if Belichick does not end up with a job as a head coach this year. So let's talk about the AFC and NFC championship game. So we're going to preview this and both matchups and then talk about some X factors. Then I'll give you guys my Super Bowl prediction for Super Bowl 58 later on at the end. So the AFC Championship game, the Chiefs going to the Ravens, and this is coming off of the Ravens knocking off the Texans, and the Chiefs going on a roll in their first road playoff game with Patrick Mahomes as their leader, knocking off the Buffalo Bills. So again, Chiefs at Ravens, 3 p.m. on CBS. The Ravens are a 4-point favorite in this matchup, and the over-under in this one is 44.5. Now, let's talk about X factors for the Chiefs. So, obviously, it's Travis Kelce. We know that. It's no denying Travis Kelce is an X factor. He's an X factor every single game. But outside of Travis Kelce, I think you got to go with Isaiah Pacheco and Rashee Rice. Now, Isaiah Pacheco versus the Bills, he had 15 carries, 97 yards, and a touchdown. He runs extremely tough. I mean, this is a guy, I mean, he can wear defenses down, you know, with his combination of strength and speed. I mean, he's every time he gets the ball in his hands, he's running it like he's, I mean, he's angry, which is how you want your running back to run. I mean, you can tell, like, the anger he runs with. So he could really, like I said, he could wear defenses down with that, but you know, Baltimore, obviously, with a solid defense that they have, being led by Roquan Smith, you know, they and Patrick McQueen, I mean, they have a solid defense. So would they be able to, you know, get up there and really create and wreak havoc in the backfield and not let Isaiah Pacheco get going, you know, which is very possible, you know, especially with them being on the road in Baltimore. You know, we'll see how the defense, what the game plan is for that. And then Rashee Rice, I mean, I know, you know, he's like an under the radar guy, but Rashee Rice makes some, I've been, you know, watching him over, you know, these last couple of playoff games that they played, you know, against the Dolphins and with the Bills. He's made some clutch catches. I mean, he comes up and, you know, big on third down. I've seen, you know, Mahomes find him on third downs and extend drives. So he's got to watch out for, especially if, you know, the Ravens blitz and they don't get there and you got Mahomes scrambling around. Rashee Rice is a guy that you got to watch out for down the field. Now, the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, obviously the X factor, with the way that he can put pressure on defenses with his ability to run and pass. So that's the obvious answer. But I did want to bring up this quote that Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs said. He said this about Lamar Jackson. If we make him throw it, we might shut them out. If we make him throw it, we might shut them out. Chris Jones, I don't know what he's drinking on, but to say that about Lamar Jackson, like he can't throw the ball, is insane. I mean, be careful what you wish for. I mean, Lamar Jackson is gonna throw the ball regardless. So it's not about y'all making him throw it, but the fact that you get up there and say, like, oh yeah, y'all will shut them out if Lamar has to throw the ball is crazy to me. Like, has he not been watching Lamar Jackson play football this year? He's done it both ways, running the ball and throwing the ball. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's dual threat. He could do it both ways. You take away the pass, he could do it with his legs. If you take away his ability to run, he can throw it over the top. He can do it both ways. So, I mean, I hope he's ready to witness that on the field, because it's coming. Lamar Jackson is coming. But I just thought that was crazy. But Mark Andrews, man, Mark Andrews is a big X factor. I think with him coming off of IR, is huge. I mean, he hasn't played since week 11, but Mark Andrews is one of Lamar's favorite targets. Don't know how close to, you know how he'll look out there with, you know, in his first game back since playing in week 11. But I think that with the fact that Mark Andrews is even out there, is going to draw some attention, and it's also going to be able to open up the field for other guys like Zay Flowers, like OBJ, like Duvernay, you know, other guys to have solid games. So I think that's how he can serve as an X factor. He may not have, you know, a bunch of catches in this game, but the fact that he can serve as a guy that's going to draw that attention from the defense is going to be able to open up the door for Lamar to find his other guys down the field. And let's not forget about Gus Edwards. I think Gus Edwards is another guy that's an X factor as well, with the way that he can run the ball. So, yeah, those are my X factors for both the Chiefs and the Ravens. And in the NFC side, let's look at this. Lions going on the road to face the 49ers. 6:30 on Fox. 49ers are 7.5-point favorite in this one. The over-under is 51.5, excuse me. X factors for the Lions for me, I got to go with Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta. Obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown is the X factor, but I think, you know, guys out of the main targets, Gibbs and Laporta are, you know, the biggest X factors for me. Gibbs against the Bucs, 9 carries, 74 yards and a touchdown. He's just under 1,000 rushing yards at 945, and he has 10 touchdowns rushing this year in his rookie year. Gibbs has great speed, great change of direction, and he's a threat out of the backfield as well. I mean, this is a guy, he puts a lot of pressure on defenses. You get him out in space, he can make a man miss, and he can really turn the Jets on. So Gibbs can really fly. and then Laporta, he's one of, you know, Goff's favorite targets too. Young guy, obviously, in his rookie year, but has made big catch after big catch. A guy that can extend drives on third down. So he's a good red zone threat as well. So, you know, those are my guys on Detroit that I feel like are X factors. And then the 49ers, obviously CMC, you know, McCaffrey is he does it all, missed everything. so we know what he can do. But I got to go with Kittle and Debo. Debo Samuel, he's returning to practice after shoulder injury. That's huge. And again, we know what he can do, what kind of threat that he is. I think that depending on how that shoulder is, I mean, Debo, even with him being out there, he, you know, drawing that attention, that's something that we have to watch out for too. So, but he's at practice. He's lifting his arms over his shoulders. His arms and extending them to be able to catch passes. So that's a good sign before Sunday. So we'll see how, you know, he's able to suit up, how he looks with the pads on. And how much is he going to play when he's out there? Are they going to continue to rotate him in or out? Like what percent is he going to be? But I do think that, George Kittle, big target for Purdy, definitely gonna, be a factor in helping extend drives, just like LaPorta is for the Lions. I think that, watching that tight the tight ends and how they fare against these defenses is gonna be important. But I think that Kittle can help take some pressure off of Purdy. And, Purdy did not have a good game against Green Bay last week. I mean, he didn't. That final drive that they had to take the lead against the Packers was good, and I'm glad the 49ers beat the Packers because y'all know how I feel about the Packers. Yeah, he's not gonna be able to play a game like that against this Lion defense and think that they're gonna come out this game with a win. So yeah, we will see what happens, but I think that those are gonna be my X factors. So we'll revisit that in just a second, but I first wanted to touch on the NIL and the transfer portal. Just really talk about, is there an issue here? Is there an issue with the NIL and the transfer portal? Yes, I think there is a issue with NIL and the transfer portal. And this is going back to what was talked about years ago when this was first being discussed. Even Saban was one of the guys that came out and said, look, we're gonna create a free agency in college football. And it's going to be dangerous if there's no, real structure to it. And that's exactly what we have right now. I'm all for players getting paid. And that's not even what I'm discussing right now. My problem and issue with the transfer portal in NIL is the fact that there's no structure. I mean, they talk about tampering and all this stuff, but everybody tampers. I mean, people are contacting players mid-season, telling them about how much money they can throw them. And, players are coming out, saying that, hey, the coaches from this team, they called me after my game that I had that was bad in this week and told me, keep my head up. And they probably threw in some other things that they're not going to mention, obviously, about, the money that they can throw to them, cars that they can drive. Look at what Isaiah Bond did, leaving to go to Texas so quickly. Pretty sure that he was in contact with Sark throughout the year. So, there's a huge issue there. I mean, it's really free agency, and it's whoever the highest bidder is getting the players, and it's taking out it's creating a sense of entitlement in a lot of these players. Because for me, it's like, look, like I said, I want all the players to get paid. I love that, but what have you done to get $3-4 million? Like, what have you done to be able to demand that type of money? You know what I mean? Like I look at players and they're at these schools, and of course, like, the players had a leverage, because if you're not gonna give them what they want and somebody else will, they'll just leave. But I just think that it's creating, everybody's just chasing the money. They're not wanting, nobody's wanting to, not, I'm not saying nobody, but players are not wanting to stay and be loyal and actually, try to win. They would rather go, I'm not saying that all the programs they're going to are bad, but some of them would rather transfer and go to somewhere they're not going to compete for a championship just because they're getting money. And like I said, I don't know everybody's situation. I'm not here to judge, but I just think that we're just looking at a issue that needs to be addressed in regards to it really being a free for all, and especially the way that Bama's roster got hit during the portal. I mean, the rules that they have there, when like your roster is open for 30 days and stuff like that, is it's pretty wild. And I'm not saying it just because it's Alabama. I mean, anybody's roster getting raided for a whole month and not being able to really do anything about it is wild. So, I mean, there's just bigger issues that we have to discuss. But again, I'm all for the players getting paid. I just think that it's creating, the mentality and the passion to want to actually just, play is gone. It's going to diminish that if they don't take hold of that. It's just going to be about, oh, who's going to throw me the most money, and I'll suit up and go play for them. It's a different day and age now. I mean, like I said, I want everybody to get paid off for their name, image, and likeness. I love that. But it's just, I don't know. It's just wild to see the way it's transitioned. But I would like to see more structure. But until there is structure, I do think that it's an issue. So that's all I have to say about that. But let's get into this Super Bowl pick. So not the Super Bowl pick, but my matchups to advance to the Super Bowl. So what is going to be my matchup for Super Bowl 58? Looking at both of these games, man, I think that they're going to be both of these games are going to be great. I think we're going to get there's not going to be a blowout in either one of these games. I think we're going to get two great games in the NFC and the AFC Championship, which I'm excited about because I don't want to see any blowouts. I think that looking at both of these games, you have really good defenses on all four of these teams. I think that offensively, teams that can score points, but in the end, in the AFC NFC Championship, I think that my Super Bowl matchup prediction is going to be the Baltimore Ravens and the Detroit Lions. I think that the Ravens get it done at home. I think that they're able to contain Mahomes, get some big stops. I think that crowd is going to create a hostile environment for Kansas City. And I think that defense from Baltimore is going to show up. And I think that they're going to, make a play when they have to, a big play. And I think Lamar is going to show, why it's his time. I think this is Lamar's time. And I think he's going to prove that. And I think that they handle business at home. And I think that they advance to the Super Bowl. And again, on the other side, man, I think that Detroit, man, their defense is going to come in there, and I think they'll get after and make it difficult for Brock Purdy. Purdy is going to make his plays, but I think ultimately, I think that pressure that Dan Campbell is going to have this Lions team bringing. You got guys, Hockenson. You got Brian Branch, who they like to bring up in the box. So they'll try to take CMC out of the game. But I think that defense is going to show up in San Francisco, and I think that the Detroit Lions will be able to get it done and get the upset on the road and advance to the Super Bowl. So that's my pick, man. Ravens and Lions for Super Bowl 58. Hey, that's all I got for y'all, man. Let me know y'all's predictions too. But I'll be excited to jump back on and talk when we have that Super Bowl matchup set to really dive into that. And until we ultimately are able to see it on February 11th. So again, man, that's all I have for y'all. I appreciate y'all's time. I appreciate you being patient with me in my absence. But again, Happy New Year, man. I hope everybody has a blessed weekend. And we'll get after it next week, man. I'll see y'all. Y'all be blessed. Enjoy this weekend, man. This weather's been crazy, but just enjoy it, relax, and look, enjoy life. Peace. I'm out.